This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Audacy's State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry. And get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
Welcome back to the 7 o'clock hour of Sports Talk, folks. Hope you are staying warm this evening. Boy, oh boy, it is chilly, and that wind cuts right through you. We're here till 8 o'clock tonight. Going to be talking a lot of LSU baseball this hour. Going to get into it with Mark Etheridge, D1Baseball.com, SEC writer. After the first break, talking about the Tigers and their early success and also how the rest of the conference fared their opening weekend. This cold weather caused the LSU game last night to be suspended and will be played another day. I know the Tigers and will now take on Nicholls on Monday. That game will be in Baton Rouge, and then the one in Thibodaux is later on in April, I believe. Right, Charlie?
Yeah, Tuesday, April 8th. So they're playing in Baton Rouge first, and then the game in Thibodaux, which was the game that was supposed to be played yesterday, was pushed back all the way to April. But they will be playing early next week, which is exciting.
Yeah, and we're going to get into the audio of Jay Johnson right here. Spoke earlier today. He did mention, too, the fact that it really wasn't the cold weather that did it. The Nicholls folks let them know, they got a phone call saying that the field was really just unplayable, and I was sure it was due to the, you know, the heavy rains that occurred the night before, and I guess, you know, dealing with the weather as well with it didn't help any. So it was like, it was a no-go last night really because of field conditions at Nicholls.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we were saying. I mean, yes, the cold played a part of it, but the field was apparently torn up from the storms the night before. So
now 4-0 LSU getting ready to take on Omaha, who is 1-3 on the season. Let's hear from Coach Jay Johnson what he had to say about this matchup and getting ready for the weekend.
Four games in, any things that you've seen that you think could carry over once the schedule picks up and conference play starts that you like?
I just think we're going to continue to find more out about our team. I did want to say, like, I'm very thankful to Purdue Fort Wayne. Like, we got left in a bad situation with the cancellation in September, and we were about probably the first LSU team to open the season on a road in forever. Like, that's where it was headed until they agreed to come here. So I forgot to mention that, but thankful to Coach Schreiber and them for getting down here and playing us. And then Tuesday, we played well. Like, there was an opening to jump on them quickly. We did, and that was that. I mean, it's been great that we've been able to get so many players in the game and get some of the newness of the season off of everybody. You know, we still have a couple guys that obviously we need to pitch. But, you know, everybody's kind of got their first taste of the season. And, you know, it'll get harder, and it'll get harder with this weekend. You know, it's got some talented players on this team.
You're starting pitching, actually, your entire staff, I guess, just really attacking the zone here early. Three walks, I think, total. Is that right?
Yeah, they've done a good job. Not a surprise. I thought the fall was pretty competitive, like, both ways, offense and pitching. I would have given the upper hand to the pitchers the first two weekends of spring scrimmages, and you want it to be that way. And then I would have given it to the offense the last weekend, and you kind of want it to be that way too. But I think we've played a lot. Like, we always have scrimmaged a lot under this kind of current format that we have now. They were excited to face different pitchers, face different hitters, and hopefully we get more results like that. But not a surprise. You know, I mean, we had to be very aggressive in pitching recruiting. Again, that's like 18 or 19 pro pitchers over the last two seasons. You know, and there's some historical things like I've talked about with SEC, you know, draft picks off one team, SEC pitching draft picked record last year. So we had to be aggressive, and I'm glad we were. And, you know, I think we evaluated well. And I think that Coach Yeske has done a really good job with these guys.
It's off the lineup's been consistent with Chris, Derek, and Jared. What do you like about those three?
Yeah, I always feel like applying pressure right from the start of the game is important. Like, I've always liked a guy that can hit an extra base hit in the leadoff spot. Chris can do that. He's got to be one of the fastest players in the country, so that immediately applies pressure. The quality of bats that we've seen from Derek since the first pitch of the fall, I mean, that's going to be a fight, you know, for the pitcher right off the bat. And then so you have that, and then you have Jared sitting there, you know, with obviously his ability to hit and to hit with power. So I think it makes the first inning difficult, and that's a good thing. I think we scored in the first inning three of the four games so far, and I like that, you know, because it's more than just the runs. It's like if the starter's 25, 30 pitches into his outing, one inning into it, like, that's going to pay dividends as well.
How about Chris in the outfield?
Yeah, he's good. He's really good. And we don't really have a bad defensive outfielder, per se. They all have athleticism and can cover ground, and he certainly sets a tone for that. SportsCenter top 10 thing is pretty – that was cool. I mean, like, that's hard to get on. And I maybe didn't even – realize how good a play it was till I saw it back, because it's just like goes up, you expect him to catch it.
I think Jared's leading the team with five walks. Yeah. Probably not surprising because you don't really want to pitch to him, but is he seeing the ball better this year?
I think he's doing great. We have a really good idea of what we're trying to get out of everything with him. And, you know, I've mentioned this before, I really enjoy coaching him. And, like, you know, we'll have had 3 years together by the time he gets drafted and is gone this year. And just the evolution of that has been really right on point. And he's a better hitter and player today than he's ever been. And I think it's just a solid understanding of what he's doing, why he's doing it, how he's doing it, and then the reps. And then we've, you know, worked on some things since we've gotten back. And it all kind of blends together, whether he maybe even realizes it or not. He's getting a really good handle on it.
Last week you talked about all your meetings, and you said you're getting to see a lot of guys, get some time. Does that change now that you got a couple games behind you? Do you have more conversations?
I just think communication's important. Like, I mean, we're kicking around things that we haven't done yet that still might open up our best team, you know, and that's our job. You know, and then it's also our job to communicate, you know, those types of things as we go. But really, when I say communicate, it's get them prepared for what's coming down the pipe for them individually. And, you know, again, the games have been kind of over before we've done this, so to speak. But our guys that have come in the game have been ready to play. We pinch hit, I think, McPaul the other day. And I mean, bam, single right off the bat. He's done that twice. As an example of that, you know, we pinch ran David Hogg, stole a base. Somebody made a play as soon as I put him in the game, you know, so I think that's important. And then that allows your depth to come to life when they have the mental capacity to understand what you want them to do and then go execute it. And then it makes it look like the thing's put together really well.
There's some specific things you look for the second week of the season or so you want to see?
Well, improvement, obviously, across the board. I think you creep a little closer to SEC play each week that we go, and so the improvement becomes important. But you're trying to win the games, too. And this is a team historically didn't land this way last year, but historically has done well once they get into conference play and has been an NCAA tournament team, which it's kind of the type of team like I target playing in the non-conference because there's a lot of RPI benefit for it. Harder to predict now with the landscape, and you don't know, you know, who everybody's scheduling, you know what I mean? And so, which luckily in the SEC, we don't have to worry about that too much. I think 8 of our 10 opponents in league all swept last weekend, so that usually takes care of itself. But, you know, well coached, very well coached, and have had success. So we want to play well to win the games and improve, you know, as we're going along.
I mean, like the mindset of the team to stay competitive, to make quality at bats, you know, all the things you want them to be regardless in school.
Yeah, I think that's been spectacular. Really good. And usually early in the season, though, I don't get too overly excited about that because everybody's super engaged at the beginning. Now, if they continue that, that's a sign of a lot of maturity. But that's all they've been allowed so far, so that's great. I'm not going to anoint them as like something that they're, you know, you don't know that. But I do like the maturity that I saw regardless of score. And, you know, I think I don't like the word competition now because we're all on the same team, but guys know there's a lot of guys that can play, you know, like, I mean, there's literally no drop off. And that's awesome. So if that elevates everybody, awesome. Good for us. And it allows you, if there is adversity with injuries, okay, you know, like you move forward and feel pretty good about it. And so I do think that's been good. And I've been very pleased with that.
Coach Jay Johnson speaking to the media today as 4-0 Tigers getting ready to take on 1-3 Omaha this weekend. Action starts tomorrow. It's a 3:30 pregame, 4 o'clock first pitch on the Bet 92.9 FM, 1350 AM. Looking forward to getting more into the Bayou Bengals and the SEC after this break. Mark Etheridge, D1Baseball.com, SEC writer extraordinaire, will join us right after this. So stay tuned right here on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. We just heard some audio from LSU head coach Jay Johnson as they get ready to face Omaha this weekend. Now happy to welcome in Mark Etheridge, D1Baseball.com, SEC writer. Mark, how you been doing, man? What a great opening weekend it was all around.
Absolutely, man. Season's here, although the cold weather is kind of putting a damper on things. But yeah, we're excited to get things going.
Yeah, we were definitely disappointed last night here. The LSU game at Nichols was canceled due to weather. We kind of found out, though, the field conditions weren't necessarily great in Thibodaux, Louisiana, either. So we're moving on, though, looking at this Tiger team, 4-0 after, you know, taking on Purdue Fort Wayne. That was a pretty impressive showing, especially from the pitching staff. And we obviously know that Purdue Fort Wayne isn't a, you know, huge test in competition. But, man, oh, man, the Tigers' arms really look solid.
You know, that was one of the things heading into the season we really wanted to see. I mean, what would Cade Anderson, what kind of jump would he have from year one to year two? What would Chase Shores look like, right, after really being out for a while? And certainly, you know, the transfer, Anthony Hyatt, what would he look like? What would Connor Ware's role be? What would Gavin Guidry look like? Right, all of these kind of things. And we're starting to kind of get an idea. And I know the competition is not great right now, but it's going to ramp up pretty quickly, certainly when they go to Texas for that tournament. I do think that this is the kind of thing that, you know, you're kind of feeling your way. You're figuring out which lineup combinations to use, what pitchers should fill what roles. This is kind of the toy. You know, Jay Johnson's got so many toys to play with. He's trying to figure out, you know, how do I use this guy in what role? And that's the stage that we're in right now.
Mark, looking at this Tiger pitching staff, I want to get your thoughts on Cade Anderson, who will be pitching the opening game of the weekend series against Omaha. He pitched the season opening this past week against Purdue Fort Wayne on that Friday night start. When we were talking with Scott Sanders, a former MLB pitcher, about Cade, Scott, I think, was a little bit surprised that Cade got the Friday night start to open the season. I know things can change, but Cade looked awesome against Purdue Fort Wayne just this past week. Yeah. And Scott kind of highlighted the new slider that he's worked on in the offseason. And he's got a great fastball as a left-handed pitcher that goes from 92 to 95. But he's also got the secondary pitches that were working against Purdue Fort Wayne. Really pounded the zone, 5 scoreless innings, 8 strikeouts. Just wanted to get your thoughts on what you've seen so far from Cade.
Well, you know, when you look at the staff, he's not – Cade Anderson is not the – I guess his stuff is not as good as some of the others on the staff, right? But I think where he differentiates himself is he has an understanding of how to use his stuff. And his, I guess, maturity as he's grown from year one to year two is going to – That's going to be the biggest thing that people notice with him. You remember last year, he was primarily a midweek starter. He got some opportunities on the weekend, and honestly, that didn't go real well. So I think, you know, you gain so much with all that experience. Plus, he's had a velocity jump. I mean, you throw it harder, and if you were throwing, 91 last year and you're throwing 94 this year, I mean, 95 at times, that's significant. And I do think that when you're left-handed, and two, when you have that experience of knowing how to pitch and you can command the way he does, it certainly gives you an advantage. And I love that, he's getting the opportunity to go out and really show what he can do this year. Because if you look around the league, there's some really, really exciting pitchers on Friday night. And I think Cade is going to be able to match up with some of the best in the conference.
Looking at the Tigers outfield, another impressive showing from them, and I know that's going to be a strength of this team as we go forward. We already saw Chris Stanfield getting one of the ESPN top plays, which Jay Johnson commented about. Always, excited to see your guys out there. But overall, just your impressions of what you've seen and what we can expect from this Tigers outfield.
Yeah, I mean, Stanfield, he's an agitator, man. I mean, when he gets on base, you know it, and I really like that different feel that he's going to get to the lineup. And then Derek Curiel, I mean, this does not look like a freshman. I mean, I think he's going to be one of the better hitters in the conference this year, and he's still figuring it out. I mean, just wait till he knows what he's doing. I mean, as a young kid coming in, he's got to be feeling, you would think, I mean, most of us would be all, worried and trying to feel our way through this, and he just jumps right in and hit straight away. And, Jake Brown was a guy last year we really had high expectations for because he had such a great fall, and he's come out and had another great fall, and it looks like, if he can put it together, I mean, that's another difference maker. And I don't know where you find, with Ashton Larson, I don't know how you get these guys enough at bats. I mean, they're just there's so many good options, but that's what Jay's. I mean, I think that's his superpower, being able to find find at bats, keep everybody going in the right direction, keep everybody, everybody wants to play, and there's only 9 spots in the lineup, so being able to keep everybody happy. And I think that's what Jay has been really good at over his career, and that's he's going to be challenged again this year because they've got plenty of options, especially in the outfield.
Jay had a great bite yesterday, Mark, or I guess this was actually 2 days ago after they beat Southern, when he mentioned that he's got 4 or 5 players that he's got to figure out how to combine all of their talents into 2 spots in the lineup. And he said, if I can make all these guys and just turn them into 2 All-American level talents, that's exactly what I'm looking to do. But he's got plenty of talent in this lineup, as you mentioned, and a lot of depth there too, which is fantastic for this roster. My question for you is, we were also listening to the audio in the first segment here, and he mentioned, or he was asked about, the top of the order. And when Daniel Dickinson kind of came into the picture from Utah Valley, I think we talked with you about this, Mark, that he's someone that you can kind of plug near the top of the lineup and just feel good about it. But at the same time, with how they've been using him early on, I think that's even a better spot for him potentially because of how good Chris Stanfield has been early on. He's basically a prototypical leadoff hitter. But then the freshman Derek Curiel has been great in the 2-hole. Jared Jones is the perfect 3-hole hitter for what this offense wants to do. But then you have to have someone to protect him. And I think that's where Daniel Dickinson will come in all season long, kind of in either that 4 or 5 hole protecting Jared Jones.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think Dickinson is probably better suited for maybe a 2-hole kind of spot. But as you mentioned, I mean, Curiel was maybe even better suited for that. And he's a freshman. He's only going to get better. So yeah, I mean, that gives you flexibility in the lineup. It also allows you, having a guy who's going to fight every at bat, right? He's not going to be an easy out. He's going to make pitchers work. Certainly, if he's in the middle of the lineup, regardless of who he's around, I do think he's going to get lineup protection too. Just because of his approach to play. I mean, that's one of the things that when I was talking to Jay earlier this year, talking about Dickinson. He's just one of these guys who is always going to fight you. He's always going to give you good at bats, and he's going to be able to make that pitcher work. And I do think that when you think about all these teams that LSU is going to play, you know, later in the year, being able to drive the pitch count up, being able to get into the bullpen earlier, things like that. You want that guy to get as many at bats as you can, and I do think as high in the lineup as you can get Dickinson, the better off you're going to be.
Looking at the matchup again for this weekend for LSU, I don't know much about Omaha. I don't know if you do. I had to even look up who basically their mascot is, the Omaha Mavericks. What can you expect for the LSU Tigers against this Omaha squad this weekend?
Mark, I just remember Aaron Fitt making fun of the Summit League just to get their teams better. It's been brutal for that league.
Yeah, this is one of those weekends where it's all about LSU, right? So if LSU plays well, they go out and take care of business, this will not be a competitive series. However, you know, as we've seen in college baseball, you can lose if you don't show up to play because they've got scholarship athletes too. So I do feel like this is one of those where, you know, if the starting pitching comes out and does what it's supposed to do, the offense is able to jump on some of these, you know, Omaha starters who are not, you know, they're not as good as what LSU sees in practice. I think LSU's going to cruise. And that's the thing, right? LSU has a less than challenging pre-conference schedule other than the trip to Texas, where, you know, they played Dallas Baptist and they've got some good opponents out there. But that's it, right? So the focus is on making sure that you're doing what you need to do to prepare yourself. And I feel like this is another step of that this weekend.
Wanted to circle back around, Mark. You mentioned earlier Chase Shores and what you saw from him this, you know, the opening weekend. I thought it was incredibly impressive because Jay had also mentioned the one thing that he saw from that performance. Chase Shores in his first game pitching in basically 2 years. You know, he had Tommy John surgery in April of 2023, and now he's back and ready to go. He threw 67 pitches, 5 innings pitched, and after that first inning where he gave up, you know, the earned run, he was just in a rocking chair, Mark. And it felt like, as Jay mentioned, every single batter that he faced, he was getting ahead of in the count. 0-2, 1-2 at the very worst. And that's exactly what you want to see from a guy coming off a major, you know, surgery in his first live game action. The jitters kind of got out the way, and then he just cruised.
Yeah, and that's really important for him right now. You know, to be comfortable as he's coming back and getting confidence, you know, from being out for so long and having some success, because he's got to trust his stuff. I mean, his stuff is plenty good enough to get people out. I mean, he's throwing 98, 99 miles an hour. He's got a really good slider. If he locates that, he probably doesn't need anything else. I mean, that's as far as he needs to go. I feel like that when you have a guy like Shores who's that talented and has that good of stuff, sometimes they get bored with it. That they try to nibble, they try to experiment, they try to do things, and hopefully, you know, he can just, you know, focus on the task at hand, because he can be one of these aces that, you know, that we talk about, that we rave about all over the, you know, like Arkansas has this year and Tennessee has had in years past. He could be one of those guys, and it's I think the mental game for him will be just as important, because we understand what kind of stuff he's got.
Looking at some of the other teams in the rest of the SEC, Mark, wondering what really stood out for you. I know Tennessee and Alabama, man, they were going yard and going, you know, heavy with the home runs. Yeah. But just wondering some other things that might have stood out from you from this past weekend of SEC action.
I was impressed with Ole Miss. They went to Arlington and played 3 ranked teams and went 2-1. I think that is that, you know, especially for an Ole Miss club that has struggled the last couple of years, that was much needed. They needed some momentum. They needed something to feel good about, and they got it. Honestly, they got drilled one time. Texas thumped them pretty good. But then they rebounded the next day, and they run-ruled Clemson. I mean, Clemson's a really good team. So I feel like that was something that stood out for me, just you know, because of where that program is right now, it's a big year for Mike Bianco. I think otherwise Texas, we knew they would hit, but we didn't know how they would pitch. And the first 2 days they pitched incredible. So even though they split those two games, I feel like, you know, they may be a little better if they continue to get that kind of pitching than what some of us had projected. I think the other thing that stood out for me is I went to Tallahassee on Friday and Gainesville on Saturday, where Florida played a doubleheader, and then I was back in Tally on Sunday. But Florida on Saturday, Brody Donay is a guy who last year was kind of all or nothing, and he would hit a home run, and then he would strike out, you know, the next three or four times. And he is now homered in all four games that Florida has played. They changed his stance. He simplified everything. He looks like an absolute force right now. And I think that's what, you know, with Florida losing Jack Caglione, you know, arguably the best player in the country, just having somebody to help pick up that slack, I was really impressed with what Florida did this weekend.
Mark, you kind of mentioned earlier LSU doesn't have many tests in non-conference play, but one of them is coming up very soon. I wanted to get your scouting report. I know that we're a little under a week away from this matchup against Dallas Baptist, but who D1 Baseball is ranked as the number 20 team in the country. Just wanted to get your thoughts on them.
Yeah, I mean, really good pitching staff, although since LSU's playing them on the weekend, I'm not real sure that you're going to get one of their better guys. So I do feel like that, you know, LSU would certainly have the pitching advantage just from the depth. I don't know if it'll be Ware or Guidry or who might throw that day, but regardless of who it is, LSU will have a starting pitching advantage. Offensively, they're okay. I mean, that's probably not their strength, but they're going to be a really solid team. I mean, we got them ranked, so obviously they're, you know, we feel pretty good about their chances. I think they're going to win Conference USA. And it'll be a good win, you know, when it comes time to evaluate resumes and all that kind of stuff down the stretch. But yeah, that's one of the harder games LSU's gonna face. And certainly playing, I believe that game's in Arlington. It'll be in a big league park. It'll be a cool environment, you know, for fans that get to attend. And I do feel like that, you know, those are the kinds of games, especially away from home, that prepare you for these big games later in the year. And LSU needs as many of those as they can get.
Mark, always appreciate your time. Great information. Definitely big fans here, and I'll be talking to you soon. Thanks so much for the knowledge.
Absolutely, guys.
Thanks, Mark.
Mark Etheridge, D1Baseball.com, SEC writer. You can follow him on Twitter or X, at Mark Etheridge. Looking at that USA versus Canada game, the Canada has gotten on the board first in the matchup, leading 1-0 over Team USA. There's about 11 minutes left in the first period there. We'll be keeping tabs on that, but USA trying to cover behind now.
They scored first last time, too, I believe. So don't lose the faith.
Maybe a good omen.
Yeah, we'll be all right.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk. You can sound off, too, on the Oaken Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line, 504-260-1870. Taking a break, and we'll be back with more right after this. Stay tuned on WWL. What's up? Welcome back into Sports Talk. Steve Geller and Charlie Long here. Want to get into the, I guess, biggest news for today concerning Saints fans was the hiring of Doug Nussmeier as the offensive coordinator for the Black and Gold. A lot of Philadelphia influence here in New Orleans. Now Kellen Moore, the head coach, bringing in the Eagles QB's coach to be the new offensive coordinator of the Black and Gold. And they've got a history together, have made stops in Dallas, the LA Chargers, Philadelphia, and now in New Orleans. And Nussmeier, obviously that name's very familiar to a lot of folks here with Garrett Nussmeier over at LSU. That is his son, so he'll be able to just take a short trip up the I-10 to see him if he gets a chance to break away up to Baton Rouge to see Garrett under center. And you kind of mentioned that, I think it was last hour, Charlie, like, whoa, could be interesting come draft time next year if Garrett Nussmeier is on the board for the Black and Gold to take. Will his dad end up coaching him?
Maybe so. That is looking way, way into the future, though, Steve. And, I mean, the Nussmeier hire was a comfort hire for Kellen Moore. Kind of like we've talked about throughout the show, just that the two have been together every single step of the way in Kellen Moore's coaching tenure in the NFL. All 6 years that he was an OC, and even the 1 year that he was just a quarterback's coach in Dallas after he finished playing,
right?
He worked with Doug Nussmeier. Nussmeier was always going to be on the staff. It was just a matter of if he was going to be the OC or, you know, what kind of role he was going to serve in New Orleans, but offensive coordinator. So not only does Kellen get the promotion, but also Doug. So that's pretty cool. But at the same time, as we've also mentioned, as Kellen Moore himself said, I think on opening night of Super Bowl that Monday before the Super Bowl, that he was still going to be calling plays if he became a head coach. So he is the head coach. He's going to be calling the offensive plays. Doug Nussmeier will be the OC. They're very comfortable with each other. But Kellen Moore will be the play caller.
Yeah, like you mentioned, a nice confidant to have around. And you with Garrett, Kellen still calling the plays for the black and gold. You know he's got a solid sounding board there with Doug Nussmeier, you know, right in his ear. Looking at some of the – recapping the rest of the hires on the offensive side of the football – quarterbacks coach Scott Tolzien, former quarterback in the league, also was most recently with the Dallas Cowboys, another Kellen Moore connection.
Right. Yeah, I mean, he was with the Cowboys as the QB coach most recently, I believe. But yeah. Yes, he was under Kellen Moore's staff when he was the OC of the Cowboys before he made the jump to L.A. with the Chargers.
Looking at running backs coach, got to bring back a familiar name in Joel Thomas. He was here for a number of years, then left last season to go to the New York Giants, and then it was like, get me out of here. I'm coming back to NOLA, baby.
Yeah, so that's the one hire so far on the offensive side of the ball that does not have the direct connection between Kellen and an offensive hire, but he has the connection to New Orleans. Alvin Kamara loves him, which is a big thing.
That's a big connection right there.
Exactly.
Make your star happy, please.
Exactly. So that's that connection. So even though he's not connected directly to Kellen Moore, he's connected to the city.
And not really a hire. They're just retaining the services of wide receivers coach Keith Williams. He'll stay on board on Kellen Moore's staff. The offensive line coach, another familiar name, Brandon Nugent, Saints Seahawks assistant offensive line coach, gets a promotion coming to be the O-line coach for the black and gold. And then tight ends coach Chase Haslett was the Cowboys offensive quality control coach and now becomes the tight ends coach for the black and gold. We still don't really have a title yet for TJ Paganetti, the Eagles assistant O-line coach and run game specialist, still finding out what exactly his role is here in New Orleans.
He served like 30 different roles with the Eagles, so we can't even necessarily pin it down what he's going to be doing.
It's amazing he left Philadelphia considering how long he's been there.
How long he's been there and how young he is.
Right.
Like, he grew up in the Eagles organization, basically. And so, yeah, no, I was kind of surprised that they kind of let him walk to New Orleans, but it's, I mean, Saints gain, obviously. It's a matter of what he's going to end up doing. I know that this past year he was the run game coordinator and also assistant offensive line coach. And, I mean, look at what Saquon Barkley and that Eagles offensive line did this past year. I know, you know, Jeff Stoutland's kind of the guy,
right?
The best offensive line coach in football. But Jeff Nowak made a great point when we had him on earlier in the week. Get as many people associated with that Super Bowl offensive staff as you can, especially the run game staff. And so Paganetti is one that I'm very excited for.
And then also the special teams coordinator, they are going to elevate a guy that's been around for a while.
Yeah, with Phil Galliano. So two of the coordinating jobs are filled. And all we need to know now is who the third one will be with that defensive coordinator spot. All signs point to Brandon Staley, the former Chargers head coach, former Rams defensive coordinator. He spent this past year on the assistant staff of the 49ers. So, you know, the connection with Brandon Staley, who was the head coach of the Chargers when Kellen Moore was there as the OC, that's why it makes sense. But nothing's set in stone just yet. That's just what we're all expecting will happen.
Yeah, also interviewed so far, at least, for the defensive coordinator job. I would have imagined they would have gotten some others done if they had them on their list. But Durante Jones, the Vikings DBs coach, was also interviewed. And another Philadelphia Eagles, their DBs coach, Christian Parker, was interviewed for the defensive coordinator job. But like Charlie mentioned, Brandon Staley, who was the 49ers assistant head coach last season, is definitely the favorite to become the DC in New Orleans now. So we'll gotta wait and see what happens there, and then I'm sure the rest of the defensive staff will get filled out.
Right. The lead candidate is Staley, and as I mentioned when we were talking with Sam in the last hour, Steve, you know, just because he wasn't successful as a head coach with the Chargers doesn't mean you should discount him as a hire as a DC. It's the same thing with, like, Dennis Allen. Like I had kind of said, with DA, he wasn't a successful head coach with New Orleans. It doesn't mean that he's not a good DC. It's the same thing with Staley. Staley was a proven excellent DC in that 1 year with the Los Angeles Rams. So, you know, I'd be excited with that hire.
Like a guy like Wade Phillips, he couldn't hack it as a head coach, but a hell of a defensive coordinator.
Exactly.
But and I'm curious, so curious to see what Dennis Allen does in Chicago this year. I think he's going to do a phenomenal job because he's got the talent there, too.
Ben Johnson bringing on Dennis Allen was probably the biggest hire he could have made. He's a similar spot to what Kellen Moore is. You know, the first-time head coach, very decorated offensive coordinator, but you need someone to run your defense. Go and get a former head coach and also a former excellent defensive coordinator.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk. We'll be back to wrap things up right after this on WWL. Closing up shop here on Sports Talk. Canada still has a 1-0 lead over USA. Tomorrow on Sports Talk, me, Charlie, and Jeff Nowak, we're talking to Michael Jannetty, SportTrack's capologist, get into the salary cap in the Saints, and also NBA insider from Odyssey. Nick Friedel will join us, breaking down the Pels and the rest of the league. So stay tuned for that tomorrow on WWL.